This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
When you tune into the show in the middle of an interview.
Number 9 is don't believe everything you read on the internet, which is where I got this from.
You're listening to Kelly and Company on AMI Audio.
Thanks for being with us on Monday, the 19th of April, and we're starting hour number 2 of the program. Ramya Muthan, Kelly McDonald, host of the show. So we were talking in the last segment a bit about language, Rummy, and how would you, do you identify? When asked about your disability.
Yes, like we're talking about identity first versus person first language, right? So I'm a person with a disability versus just saying I'm disabled. Right. Honestly, I'm not bothered either way either. I lean towards how Michelle was talking about her passion for the description, which is kind of lack thereof. And I'm the same way. I think I identify usually as just a low vision person. So identity first language.
It's interesting about
is it the opposite? Yes,
terminology. Has terminology offended you? You know, when someone, and I don't mean necessarily about an individual, someone has a, you know, terminology like crippling disease or something like that, as much as, oh, that was a crippling event or you know, for that. Does that kind of thing make you stop?
Those things do irk me. Yes. When we're talking about using like disability identifiers as negative kind of just societal language, those things bother me more than the identity first or person first, like self-identification. Really, because I think that's an idea of us not moving forward.
Mm-hmm. For sure, it is
like that.
It's stuff that you used to do, and again, get it that it's for descriptors for using a diversity of language, apparently, and for people writing and to make something colorful in whatever way you consider that colorful, and using mixed words. So it's always very interesting because you want to say, well, can you not use another word? Here's a thesaurus. Take a look.
Exactly.
Bill Shackleton is here for the final Monday buzz. We say that, and Rumya always wants me to quantify this. That doesn't mean no more buzz. We have him back Wednesday and Friday this week, and next week we move Bill to Wednesday through Friday, which will be his new days that he'll be on the program. Sir, welcome back, and we know you've got some stuff for us to start with, but do have to make sure we tell folks that so they don't look for you next Monday. A community reporter will be here in your place. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Is it Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, or Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday?
Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. See, oh, okay. You confused everyone, Kelly.
How did I confuse everyone? You guys aren't listening. It's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Next week, Monday, Tuesday, the community reporters. Never mind. Bill, read the first item.
Yeah, I should just read the first item, shouldn't I?
Yeah,
this is one. How opera singing is helping long-haul COVID-19 patients recover. This story comes from CTV News.
Amuthan, sing some opera.
No.
Sing. I don't sing on the buzz.
No, no. Rummy doesn't sing on this show, even for her supper.
No.
So go on. Well, the Neo Breathe is a program developed by the National Opera Company of Britain and the NHS. And what it does, well, first of all, we know that when you have COVID-19, even when you recover, you have long-term symptoms, anxiety being one of them, and shortness of breath, and all of these things that come in. So this, they've come together, these two, the NHS, have decided, well, why don't we come up with a program that teaches people how to breathe so they can, control their anxiety. So apparently what they've done is they have Zoom classes. It's absolutely free. This program is free to anybody. You can, it's 6 hours, 1 hour a week it's in Zoom. And apparently they teach you how to breathe. Now what they've done is they've taken the model of how they train opera singers. Now, you know, I mean, I'm not an expert on opera singing, but they use different scales and notes and highs and lows and different parts. It basically uses all parts of the diaphragm mm-hmm. in order to warm them up. So why not
the kind of breath control that opera singers have? I mean, if you're going to learn breath control on any kind of vocal techniques, might as well start with opera, right?
Well, that's what the thinking is of this program. We can teach people, and you don't even have to have a musical background to partake of this program, because they just teach you how to breathe. And apparently it can help people control a lot of their symptoms. And I think it's great.
Yeah, it is. I love it, because that is, unfortunately, and especially doing something like that through Zoom, one of the things that tackles us the most, the people who have been who have had COVID, regardless if it's something that lingers. If you've had any case, especially one that's put you in the hospital, Billy, that is often such an issue. And Rum, you know how much we do that exercise, or we've been told even do your breath exercises every day right now in case you are unfortunate enough to get COVID. At least you're already working on trying to strengthen the lungs for what extra help it could give.
Yeah, everything. And honestly, there's so many like meditational values to learning breathing properly, or taking the time out to do deep breaths. You know, because you're talking about anxiety being one of the side effects, or the long-lasting effects of testing positive for COVID, right? So there's a ton of things that affect us physically because of the way that we breathe, but also, yeah, lung capacity, Kels. So, you know, this is just a great way to kind of put all of those into one program, one approach, and get people probably even having some fun.
Yeah, I would think so. And I'm sure people find it kind of interesting, especially if you said, geez, I never really thought about singing. But no, I'm also certainly sure when you start doing it, the reminder of the weakness in your lungs, especially if you are unfortunate and they had gone stiff or anything like that, that long-term scarring. Billy, where do we want to go next?
Where do we want to go? I want to go to, I bet you don't know what a chossage.
No.
No, you don't.
No.
This comes from HuffPost UK. So a meat company called Hag, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, in Britain, they have come up with a chocolate-coated sausage. You would be amiss if you thought it was going to be chocolate-coated sausage meat or chocolate-coated salami. It's not. It comes in the type of, like, I guess they call it butcher paper that you get, you know, when you get stuff from the butcher. And you would have thought it's chocolate-coated sausage meat. And people, I think it's a marketing scheme, quite frankly, but it's actually made of sugar, butter, milk, cherries, chocolate powder, cocoa, sunflower seeds, and all this sort of thing. And it, when you bite into it, as one of the tasters said, it's sort of, your mind is thinking it's so much that it might be like salami, that perhaps it has the same texture, but it's not. And I think it's great. I mean, I would love to get my hand on one of those things.
You're heading to Italy, are you?
Huh? Let's go back to the ingredients for a second.
You're going to have to go to Italy, okay, Billy, to do that? Sorry.
Yeah, you got to go to it's a favorite in Italy. What is it? It's a sugar, shortbread, amaretto biscuit, icing sugar, sunflower seeds, cherries. What else have I missed here?
Raisins, cocoa powder.
Raisins, cocoa.
And ice, Wow, I don't know how this translates into a sausage at all. I'm just not believing this.
I think the shape, right?
Yeah, but
the shape.
And it would firm up enough, but yes, also stay soft enough.
But it's supposed to taste like meat? With no meat in it?
You would think that it would, and that's why people, I think, are buying it like crazy, because of the fact
they don't
that
even
it's
know
supposed,
if they like it.
Yeah, they don't even know, and I think because
it's typical people, we just do it like why not? Oh, this looks cool. Hey, have you ever tried? Yeah, I'll try it. You know, what's it taste like? I think that's what always happens. If something grabs us like this, whether it's the look of it. Of course, that's the thing. It also can turn us off, too. But I think it's the combo and the way it must look. Like, when you look at those ingredients, and if you say, okay, well, when that gets firm enough, that's going to look like, Yeah, maybe. And yeah. I think you can buy into that and it be that kind of little snack you're walking along with and chomping on just like you would a pepperette or something.
Sure.
Well, it's
except
it's
it won't taste or smell like pepperette.
Yeah. Well, it's supposed to be an Easter tweet, an Easter thing, right? But because it comes in butcher paper, I mean, that's even another giveaway that you would think it's meat.
To look at, to see them stacked there. You go buy it. And you put it out like where people will think that, oh, it's meat. It's wrapped up in the, you know, like a see-through plastic. Away you go. You know, you get outside. Oh, hey. But by now, so many people must know about it.
Yeah, no. The chocolate cherry combination is interesting, too. Never been really into that.
Really?
Really? I love that. Really? You're kidding.
No, it's Rumya Bill. She doesn't like raisins either.
Just give me all the chocolates and, leave out the raisins, too. But, okay, cool.
Nice. I'm like you, Bill. I wouldn't mind trying it out. Maybe you might find it making its way to some of the Italian food grocers and stuff like that.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Your last piece, sir.
Well, our last one is a vision-impaired person in England is actually afraid of e-scooters. I think we've talked about e-scooters. Nottingham, this comes up a lot, but Nottingham, they're testing a new product. They've been testing it for a year. They've been testing e-scooters, and this woman has been injured. She's tripped over them, and she basically is saying that the city has to do more to address the concerns that vision-impaired people have. Now, there's a bit of a misnomer here. I'm getting mixed messages. The article has basically said that the scooters, you can only drive them on private land with permission from the owner. And then they've turned around and said that if you sign up for a scheme, you can ride these scooters, not on the road, but you can ride them and on other places. And I don't know whether people realize that you can't ride them on the sidewalk or whether you can, but it's very dangerous. And this woman thought she was on the road and she was only on the sidewalk. So, you know what I mean? Like, I've done that before.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a scary thing. We've had Kim Kilpatrick on, our community reporter in Ottawa, and many discussions that I see in emails through Toronto right now, really with the big concern for so many of us. And because let's face it, you get hurt. Like, do people have insurance? Are you going to get help? What? Anyway, Billy,
we're
music's playing. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Oh. All right. See ya.
Certainly leaves food for thought. Bill Shackleton bringing that to us on The Buzz. He's back on Wednesday right here on Kelly and Company. We'll take a break. Ladies and gentlemen, when we return, we chat with the general manager of Accessibuild after this. You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.